Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Tell me about Beastie. I don't, you know, it wasn't really a band that I was familiar with before setting up for this interview, but I would love to, I guess, get what your distillation of what the band represents and what it is.
Yeah, no problem. So I've been using that name for a really long time as a solo artist. I thought about changing it when I put this band together. I had another band. It was a completely different genre. There's like a link to that album. It's like kind of country Americana, which is a very different thing from what we're doing right now. But the current iteration is kind of a lot of culmination of sort of different things I've wanted to do since I was about 15 years old. We're calling it dance grunge. What is it? Dance grunge, punk, indie disco, as a genre, non-binary as a genre. So there are a lot of different influences. I'm playing electric guitar, which is really nice. I haven't really been doing that in a really long time. And a lot of the project for me is combining talking about real heavy personal things, but then also adding elements of just sort of stupid and fun, because I think you have to do both. You have to talk about the hard stuff, and then you have to play, because otherwise things are a nightmare. like, we have one song called I Want to Hit You with a Stick, and it's just silly and stupid. Finding safe places to express aggression as well that don't harm others, I think, is really important. So we actually have people fight our backup singer with pool noodles while we perform the song. I think for me, it's like a big ADHD mashup. And one thing that's been really cool, like we've only performed 5 times so far, is that people seem to be really responding to the juxtaposition of all of these different sort of genres and styles somehow being one thing. The thing I really love about that is that we can play on a bill with lots of different kinds of bands. We would fit in with a punk band, and we had a swing band follow us, and that somehow worked. So, big, super queer, gender fluid, androgynous sort of emotional dance party.
That's beautiful. I also really like what you said, like, about aggression. Because, like, despite the fact that it can be, like, a really scary thing and can also be harmful for others in certain scenarios, it is a very real feeling and emotion that, like, everyone experiences, like, anger or rage. Like, that's why there are things like rage rooms and, like, avenues for people to sort of, like, let that go in a way that is relatable and not directly harmful to those around them.
I think there's a lot of different ways you can do that. I know for me, for a really long time, I had to learn how to let myself be angry. I grew up with a really scary, angry person, and I was so afraid of ever being that. I just turned all of my anger into sad or scared, and it's a long story as to how I realized I was doing that. But getting the right container, building permission and consent into things, you can really go a long way with the same emotion. But you don't have to harm people. And so it's been really fun getting to bring that part of sort of how I've been processing my own stuff to the stage, and in a way that, like, we had a Valentine's show on Friday the 13th for people who are single, or like either really sad and single, or stoked to be single, or just completely ace and don't want anything to do with dating. And then people in relationships could come as our allies. But I loved We did the concept of ritual too is really important to me. I used to hate that word, but I studied expressive arts therapy in Berlin, and I learned that I'm actually a very ritualistic person, creating these containers as a place to process things together. Like I actually was going through a breakup not that long ago, and that show, I still was in the same sad feelings, but there was joy with it because I got to play with other people, and it was really lovely to see how that landed with them as well.
Rituals can be so many different things, and like in a lot of ways, they can be very communal as well.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, and one thing I've noticed too is that it feels like not just like the concert venues and the crowds being a community, but it really does feel like the bands within Vancouver are sort of like their own community. Like you often see a lot of the same bands performing with one another. I'm wondering if you do have some sort of like working relationship with the other bands that are going to be performing, Numb Dame and Doom Scroll.
I personally actually haven't met them yet, but my keyboard player is in another project called Doom Loops. They're also awesome. And they said that Numb Dame was kind of like their band version of like a drag mom. They were like, so they're really excited to share the stage. And then, yeah, Doom Scroll, I had a friend of mine connect me with them, but they're from the States. And so I haven't met any of them. I'm really excited. And again, this project particularly is quite new. I've been doing music since I was 15, but I had vocal nodes at a certain point. So I actually had to take almost 7 years off. And so it's been a very long, slow rebuild. And it's exciting to get back into the scene as a band and not just as like a solo folk artist.
Yeah, I'm curious about like the transformation that's happened, because when I was looking into Beastie, one of the things I came across was like your Bandcamp page.
Oh yeah.
And it has an album from 2019, Tiny Crimes, and that's very much like what you said earlier, like Americana, folk, country, and now it's shifted since then. You know, like as you said, non-binary is a genre. And I'm wondering, I guess, if you could explain like what marked that.
I mean, a lot of it is, for one, I'm just ADHD as all hell, and I want to make if it's a sound I can make, I want to make it. Mostly the list of music I don't want to do is shorter. I also have, with another project, like a hip-hop album, like that's almost done. So part of it is that. I grew up on country music, and it's something that I thought that I hated and then kind of came back around to. You scroll back in our Instagram, I did this event called Rainbow Rodeo that was amazing with Elise LeBlanc and Leah Barley, who are both amazing local like folk country singers. Elise is on the island. But anyway, so that's definitely a side of me. But I've been itching to have a kind of grungier band for a while, and I think I've just been intimidated by gear and by, I don't know, I can be really shy in some ways, and it's taking me a while to feel confident enough to sort of take up the space and also just like get the songs out. And I will have to be honest, I have to credit my ex, who is a career guitar player and really encouraged me and actually built me the guitar that I now play and basically set me up with a pedal board and was like, here, you have pedals now. you play electric guitar. And I'm like, oh God, okay. So yeah, I have to really credit that person, but it's also something like I had a band when I was 15 that sounded a little bit like a lot of Beastie stuff now. I wish that our demo had not been deleted by MySpace, but yeah, it's always been there. It just hasn't been something I've been able to kind of put together yet. But the folk thing is just as much me as the jump around and hit people with fake sticks thing is, so...
I mean, okay, this is maybe a non sequitur, but you mentioned MySpace, and
yeah. That
is something that really bothers me. Like, I mean, I'm only like 26, so I never used MySpace, but a lot of times I'll like look up an old Vancouver band or something from the 90s, and they'll have a MySpace page, and it is just completely non-functional. Like,
yeah. Every
photo or piece of audio on there is just like completely non-accessible, and it drives me crazy.
It's heartbreaking. Yeah. They lost so much material. Well, that's another thing that's interesting. Like, I'm 40. And again, really long story, but it's taken me a really long time to feel capable. And like, I was really, really socially anxious, which held me back a lot as an artist. I'm not on stage if I know what the parameters are and I know that it's my job to be there. but all of the other stuff about it is hard for me. And I used to party really hard, which is one of the reasons I lost my voice. And it's one of the reasons I got sober. And now I have like a healthy relationship to alcohol, which is great. But when you're not the last person at every party networking, it's a whole other thing. So it's been interesting to, at the age that I am, be like, now is the time for me to invest in a band. But I think as well, like, there are so many conversations going on in the media in terms of, like, different body shapes and different gender identities and sexualities and, like, being like, hey, all of us are valid and, you know, she gets to make art. I feel like the conversation around age hasn't happened as much. I have a tattoo along the edge of my left hand that says it's only too late when you're dead. And that's very much my attitude. But yeah, no, I was definitely around for MySpace. But it's interesting too with this band, the genre spanniness of it seems to translate also into age spanness. It's been so touching. Like every show we've played, there's been a really wide range of ages and some really, really young people have been really excited about it, and every single show people get up and dance and sing along to songs they've never heard, which is just amazing for me. So yeah, I get in my head about it sometimes, but it's like, this is when I've had these things available to me and this is when I'm ready, and I also want to be vocal about, like, just get out and do the things that matter to you, because you have to. What's the other choice? The other choice is miserable. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. The other choice certainly is miserable. Could you tell me a bit about some of the people you're performing with, like your actual, I guess, group mates?
Yeah.
I don't really know much about them, so I'd love to learn more.
Absolutely. Okay, so my whole vision with this band was to just, like, be all, like, queer, gender-fluid people. We have our one, like, quote-unquote token not that dude who's been my friend for a really, really long time. His name is Kenan Zeigler-Sunger, and he is someone who very early on, when I was still extremely shy, at Artswells, was like bugging me to get on stage with this big band and like just always just being like, come on, like inviting me and being like, hey, you. And then we were just kind of acquaintances, but over the pandemic, I ended up co-hosting. He actually has a radio show on Co-op Radio called No Apologies Necessary every Wednesday from 2:30 to 3:30. During the pandemic, we ended up in each other's bubble and just spending a lot of time together. And I don't co-host very much now just because I'm working on Wednesdays. But we've known each other through that. And we have a funny relationship because we don't always see eye to eye on some things, but we have very much like a family kind of relationship. And then Eva, who's on keys, and Morgan, who's on drums, there's an event called Gander Jam in Vancouver, which is delightful. It's a jam. It attracts all kinds of really talented local musicians. And it's a place where lots of people put bands together. Apparently there's the first Gander Jam baby now from people that have met there, which is cute. I met Morgan there. And he's like studied jazz drumming and all kinds of different things. And we didn't know each other, but a bunch of people were saying they wanted to go to the Number 5 Orange. And we were both like, oh, we're kind of tired. And then everybody bailed but us. And we were strangers and we didn't feel like going home. So we went together, but then just ended up talking about gay things and not paying attention and just becoming friends. So that's Morgan. And then Eva and I, we also met I might have been Improv Karaoke, which is another really cool jam that's more sort of spacious and abstract in Vancouver. And they're the youngest person in the band. They're just a powerhouse. They're like adulting so hard and getting their masters and doing the whole, but then they're also like non-binary and queer and like just artsy. And they're like somehow very A-type and very artist at the same time, which is really cool. And then Jen, who's our backup singer, Jen was one of the leads in Red Haven, which was they still play sometimes. They were super like known, toured lots, local band, super powerhouse singer, great songwriter, and then also crazy amounts of schooling and like psychology and stuff. I'm really nerdy about those things, so we love to nerd out about all that. And then Eva, Jen, and I are all non-binary, and then Kenan and Morgan are both he, him. But it's been really cool. At the photo shoot, we we're getting a lot of direction from the photographer asking us if we're comfortable like touching each other and stuff. And we're all really pretty cuddly with each other. And it's very sweet. I appreciate getting to know them all more. I think we're starting to really feel like more cohesive as a band. And yeah, I'm excited to just spend more time with them and like do things as a group.
Mm-hmm. Those things as a group, does that include like more online accessible music or like a full album even?
Oh, hell yeah. We have an album in the works already. Yeah, we are recording with Adam Percy on Denman Island, and we are most of the way through. We have a couple more songs, and then we've got to get things mixed and mastered and all of that, but most of it's all laid down, and I am so excited. It sounds really good. Like, I feel like I spend a lot of the time sort of second-guessing musical things, and sometimes I'm really, like, proud of stuff. But it's been interesting with this band where I just straight up feel like, no, it's a good time. It's good music. Come see us. Like, it's worth it. And the album, yeah, I played it for my youngest, the youngest person that I know, and they really liked it. And that was really, that touched me. So, yeah, we don't know when the album's going to be done quite yet. I'm still trying to look into some grants and things so I can pay everybody really well and also just do promotion and stuff for my last album that I made, which was recorded by Blake McKay. It was great, but I just didn't have the energy to do any promotion or anything. So we worked on this whole album and then I didn't really do anything with it. So I don't want to repeat that. And yeah, so I can't say when. I'm hoping at the very least to get the single out, which is just like about all the times growing up that I just told myself that I liked a girl in a very friendly, I think you're so interesting and cool. And I was like, no, you're just kind of gay, dude. So the single's about that. And I'm hoping to get it out in time for Pride and to do a whole bunch of Pride shows.
That is so exciting to hear. And I mean, when the album is eventually done, make sure you send it our way.
Of course, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to send it to everyone.
Awesome. Awesome. Another thing I noticed, you are on the lineup for a sort of poetry ambient night that's part of Collective Disorder called Reverie. How did that come about?
So I met Autumn because Beastie played, Beastie played at an event that Autumn was at, and then I went to one of their events, and then we connected, and I shared some of my poetry. Music is my main thing, but basically if it's an art, I kind of do it, and I definitely have some spoken word stuff that I've done in the past, and I went to clown school, and I've done storytelling, and so it's kind of like, just put me on a stage, I'll be happy there. Yeah, I'm really excited about that event. It's a cozy pajama kind of vibe and queer artists sharing their stuff. And I haven't done any spoken word in a while. And I was definitely getting sick of being on stage alone. But now that I've been doing stuff with the band a bunch, I think it's going to feel like a positive thing. It'll feel nice to like do another thing that I do on stage as well.
It sounds like just from the conversation we're having that like either through Beastie or some of these like other solo things that you're doing, you're getting on stage a lot over like the past year or so. Yeah. How's that felt?
I mean, I kind of come in and out of being on stage. Like I'm even with the jams, like with Gander Jam and Improv Karaoke, it's all improvised. I love doing improvised vocals and making up stuff on the spot. So with those things, even like I get up a fair amount. Yeah, I'm still trying to get better at booking gigs. I'll have to admit, like, way back in the day, before I lost my voice, I had, like, a little bit of a following under a different name. And I just heavily relied on the fact that people kind of knew who I was a bit and would call me for shows. So I didn't have to do anything, which meant I didn't gig all the time, but I was gigging, like, enough. Whereas now it's like, I have to start trying more. I mean, as the band gets more known, that'll be easier. But, yeah, I guess between all the things I do, I'm usually up on stage a little bit pretty often. It's really good. It helps my mental health. It's really good for me. And having a variety is really important just in my life in general. But yeah, like I also, yesterday I was at a jazz jam at East Cafe and I got up and did some jazz tunes. I'm looking at getting a little jazz band together. I love singing that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's just nice to feel like in terms of the things that I've been personally working on in myself, I feel like I'm starting to really see, I don't know. In some ways, I feel like all we're ever doing is trying to work back to who we were as little kids before the world scared us. I've wanted to be a singer since I was alive. It's just, I used to get in trouble for writing songs past my bedtime. So it's definitely feeling really great to just have more confidence and to take up more space and, yeah, have more opportunities as a result of that. The stage is my happy place. It's, I know when it's my turn. I know it's my job to talk. I know when it's done. And I also love getting to go into things that are often considered really vulnerable, but are just not a lot of the time for me. And getting to see people connect with things and helping them, supporting them and feeling however they're feeling and trying to create a safe space for them to express themselves, whether it's, yeah, sorrow or play or anger or whatever it is, in a way that brings us together as opposed to isolates us.
It is a really vulnerable and like scary thing, but at the same time, like it's what makes us us, you know?
I think for me, I mean, I think it's kind of like neurodivergent lens, like growing up with some of the things that were going on, I thought that if I learned to express all those things and be comfortable with feelings, that would just make relating to other people extremely easy for me. No, it's actually kind of alienating because apparently that's not, people don't just obsessively nerd out about that for their entire lives for the most part. So it's been interesting kind of navigating that. But one thing it means is that I'm very comfortable in, like, that's what makes me feel safe. The more people are genuinely sharing how incredible or terrible or whatever things feel, the more I feel comfortable because that's where I live. It's just, I'm a super sensitive human and for, you know, better and for worse. Yeah, it's like a combination of wanting to connect, but also it's always been my way of kind of coping and trying to make myself feel safe. It's like, if you're willing to show yourself to me, then I can trust you more. So yeah, trying to come more out of the fear place though, and more into the connection place.
Yeah. And I think just the more you go into that connection place, like the fear place just becomes smaller or like, yes, less significant.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Charlie, it sounds like you have a show on March 24th at Green Auto.
Yeah.
You are doing jazz work as well. You have a show with Collective Disorder where you're doing poetry.
Yep.
That's a lot. How can people who want to stay connected to all of that and know what you have going on, how can they do that?
Instagram is the best way. We're going to work on a website, but we don't have one yet. So it's just at Music Beastie, and it's spelt like Beastie Boys, so I-E at the end. We haven't officially announced them yet, but we're booked for 2 shows in May. So we're going to be playing more for sure. So definitely check it out. Also, I love collaborating with other people and, again, doing improvs and doing poetry. And so feel free to reach out to book me personally or the band. We're definitely looking to get out there more.
All right. That's so awesome. Thank you again, Charlie, for taking the time out of your day to speak with me about all of these super cool things that you have going on.
Well, yeah, likewise. Thanks for getting us on the radio. And I would love to see some of your listeners at our show tomorrow.
Please enjoy 30 Seconds of Nature, brought to you by Ducks Unlimited Canada. Learn how you can experience nature in your community at ducks.ca.
You are now tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Want to know more about the channel? Find us online at cjsf.ca.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nazvetarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. A recent research study from the University of British Columbia has identified a link between the water runoff from artificial turf fields in Metro Vancouver and a lethal chemical buildup in coho salmon populations. This is due to a specific chemical found in artificial turf fields that has been proven to be particularly lethal to coho salmon. To learn more about what this research entails, we sat down for an interview with one of the study's lead researchers, Katie Maloney, an environmental engineering PhD student at UBC. During our conversation, we talked about how this research first came about, as well as what can be done to address toxic chemical runoff from artificial turf fields. Please take a listen.
So in this study, we looked at a handful of different artificial turf fields throughout the Metro Vancouver area. We looked at the infill material that's used in these turf fields. The vast majority of artificial fields use creme rubber infill material. So that's typically produced from used tires that are then ground up and used to infill one field. The crazy stat I like to give is that your average soccer pitch contains around 20,000 passenger tires worth of creme rubber. So just this like massive volume of creme rubber in a relatively small and confined area. Our group has done a lot of work looking at road runoff and how that can be linked to coho salmon die-off. And we kind of wanted to consider if artificial turf fields might also be a large source, just given the volume of creme rubber that's in there. So we did some bench scale work looking at both creme rubber infill as well as alternative infill materials and looking at the chemical compounds that might be released into rainwater. On top of that, we took samples from a few artificial turf fields during rainfall. That was about a year ago now. And we looked at concentrations of both heavy metals as well as organic contaminants, including 6-PPD-quinone, which is the chemical I talk about that is linked to coho salmon die-off, as well as a few other fish species.
What spurred this study in the first place to look into, I guess, the effects specifically of artificial turf fields and how that may be affecting salmon populations in particular?
Yeah, so the compound that has been killing salmon was identified by researchers at the University of Washington in 2021. So we've kind of been looking at this chemical for a while now. Specifically, we wanted to look at artificial turf fields after some volunteer stream keepers reached out to our lab. They had seen coho die-off in a stream, and they knew that that stream was impacted by roads, but it was also very close to an artificial turf field. So they were kind of wondering if that might play a factor in the die-off that they saw.
Is there anything that can be done about this, or that should be done, or is currently already being done? You know, like, is it a matter of creating turf fields with alternative materials, or is it just not making turf fields altogether and opting for natural grass fields or something like that?
Yeah, that's a very common question. So I think there's a few answers. I think to start, we have to recognize there's a lot of fields that already exist. And it's expensive for municipalities to go in and replace this. So alternative infill materials are an option, but they can cost double, sometimes even triple what you might pay for this recycled material. And that's a guesstimate. You know, numbers can really range. Beyond that, we've seen some interest in starting to use what we call green infrastructure. So this might be like a rain garden or any other kind of natural system where you have stormwater that's coming off of the turf field drainage system flow through essentially like soil and plants in this natural system before it is then released into a nearby stream or body of water. Another researcher at our group, Tim Rogers, he published some work 3 years ago now showing that passing 6-PPD-Q contaminated water through a bioretention cell can reduce your 6-PPD-Q concentrations by around 90% plus. So that was really promising work, and it's exciting. I think in the world of turf fields, that's great news because it's a small area, it's containable, it's treatable. In the realm of thinking about highways and road runoff, that's a lot of water, and it would be really difficult to get all of that water into a natural system effectively, especially during these heavy rainstorms.
What are the next steps in your mind regarding this line of research? Is there another study that you were working on currently, or is there, I guess, just more work that needs to be done to see what specific effects that these runoffs are having for salmon populations?
Yeah, so I have ventured off into a whole wide world of analytical chemistry. I'm kind of branching from this project, but if we want to think about her field specifically, I'll mention that the EU has recently released what they're calling a microplastics ban. So they're phasing out the sale of microplastics, and that does include crumb rubber in their definition.